originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Sunday.
Now here's Mike
Susan
Penna
Saber
and June
wins
Feld.
The Derby for Tom Fletcher.
The salt will get Trainer Steve Asmussen, career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Fasig Doug O'Neill.
Maxwell and D-Way Lucas. Trainer D-Way Lucas is 6th win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give Trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And dialed in never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oakland.
With our live streaming on our website at horseracingradio.net. Happy to have you with us on what promises to be another very special program. And Jude, we've started to kind of bring back some of the trainers that joined us on this program when we first started 5 or 6 years ago, even 7 years ago. And the things that have happened to them in that time period are really, I mean, we're going to make a whole 1 hour show with this guest here tonight of all of the things that have happened in a very short period of time for this individual. But we've seen that with so many of the trainers that we brought back on for a second go round here on Trainer Talk.
Yeah. It's amazing how much difference like 5, 6 years makes
Incredible.
In a trainer's life. And sometimes the rise to stardom is meteoric, as they say. Somebody's like cruising along and then all of a sudden they get some nice horses and their whole life changes. It's really cool.
Yeah, it can happen in an instant, and that's what we may see from our guest here tonight. He first joined us on this program on April 1st, 2015. That's right, April Fool's Day. But trust me, there was nothing foolish about his approach to training racehorses. And now the 34-year-old is training on his own after spending more than a decade learning from his father, the Hall of Famer, Mark Cassey. He is, of course, Norman Cassey, and he joins us right now on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Norman, welcome, my friend.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for having me on again, Jude. Nice hearing from you.
Well, we're glad to have you on board. It's been a string of a lot of young trainers lately, and you're just getting started out on your own. Very exciting.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. I'm kind of joining the fray when there's a lot of top young guys that are trying their hand at training, and it's a very competitive market. But it just feels like the time's right for me, and I guess the time's right for those guys as well.
Yeah, we're still maybe about a week or 10 days away from seeing the first official Norm Cassey saddled racehorse go to the post. But Norm, I don't know if we've ever had a trainer come on this program for a second time who has had so many significant life-changing events occur in their career and in their personal life in just 3 years, like you have had. What a difference 3 years makes.
Just very fortunate, Mike. You guys said it a little earlier. It's kind of right place, right time, had the right opportunities, and you know, took the opportunities and ran with them, and we've been very successful the last few years for professional reasons and personal reasons. It's just, you know, I'm humbled by everything, and I'm just grateful to be in the position I'm in.
How did you know that this was the right time to break away from your dad's operation and go out on your own?
You know, the main thing is, Mike, it's just I don't like to come off as being arrogant or not grateful or humble for what I have, because I'm very grateful for what I have. I just feel like I'm done growing in the position that I'm in, and I've become bored. It's become stagnant. I know it's hard to believe, but it's hard to get out of bed right now because I just haven't been as motivated as I was. And I think basically, to make a long story short, I haven't been motivated because I feel like I've maxed out my potential at the level that I'm at now. And now I'm ready for personal and professional growth. And basically the horsemanship stuff I'm very, very confident about. I'm very confident about the way that I train horses and the team that I have, how they train horses. But running a business, getting my own clients, those type of things, they scare me. And they scare me because I don't know how to do them. And I'm motivated to learn, and I want to try my hand that way. And it's just been a really exciting to try and do new things that I haven't been doing.
Yeah, you've got the horsemanship down pat. There's no question about that. But there's so many other facets to running a business, and you really don't know what it's like until it's your name on the program. You're the trainer. You call all the shots. You gotta swim or sink, and it's a whole different mindset, I think.
Yeah, and like I said, dude, that's why I want to do it. It's so funny. There's two trains of thought. Some people think that I'm absolutely crazy for doing this. They know that I have the best job in horse racing, which I really do. And then there's the other group, horsemen that I respect, like Todd Pletcher or Bill Mott. They've come up to me and said, congratulations on doing this. It's time. You deserve to be doing this. And, you know, I just think, for me personally, I was never going to be satisfied until I at least tried it. If I fail, then I fail. But at the very least, I'd feel more like a failure if I didn't try. So here we are, and we'll see what happens.
What's it like to have a guy like Todd Pletcher come up to you and say, you're ready. This is the time.
Well, it means the world, because I think we've probably touched on it. Todd Pletcher is a guy that, you know, I have a handful of heroes or role models or idols I look up to, and Todd Pletcher is certainly one of the top guys on that list. And, you know, what it does is it kind of justifies what you've believed in all along and gives you that little extra boost of confidence that you needed.
Well, you and Todd have a lot in common. You know, your father's both trainers, and Todd knows exactly what you're going through. I'm sure he went through it too and has had fantastic success. I mean, I would think if you did half as good as Todd Pletcher, you would just be ecstatic, you know? So I think that's a good – he's a great role model for you because you guys have so much in common.
Yeah, I'm really happy that I, early on in my life and my career, that I looked up to a guy like Todd, because I think a lot of success is based on the people that you look up to and the people you kind of want to emulate or whatever. And you can see a lot of Todd in our organization and a lot of what we do. And there's a reason behind that, because we respect what he does. And, you know, good horsemen, good, most successful people in general, any walk of life, take little things that they like about everybody else, mold it together to make their own program. And that's what happens. And that's what Todd was to me.
Norm, you mentioned a couple of the more challenging aspects of going out on your own, those being learning how to run the business yourself and how to acquire new clients on your own. And you said you were scared to death because you're not exactly sure how to go about it. What's the game plan going to be to make sure you can handle both of those things?
Well, basically just doing stuff that I'm really uncomfortable with, and that's the fear of rejection. I've never been a guy, you know, as crazy as it sounds, I'm not the most confident guy when it comes to facing rejection. So you got to go up and you got to basically sell yourself, sell your program, and say to new potential people that you would like to train for that, hey, if you're willing to give me a shot, I promise to deliver results. And, you know, I the fear of having somebody say, no, we're already covered, or no, your program doesn't fit our style, you know, that's scary to me. But also it just has to be done. Like you can't grow as a person without rejection or without failure. And that's what I'm learning. I'm learning to put myself out there, be in uncomfortable positions, and, you know, either probably most important, just learning from those positions.
Yeah, our sport is one where you learn something new every day. And of course, this is an entirely different facet for you, but you you've got a lot of things going for you. I think you know you've got an outgoing personality. You're certainly not a wallflower kind of guy, and you know, I think people will respond to you. You have a great name, a tremendous family history of success in the horse business. And then you were lucky enough not to get rejected by Gabby Gaudette, so that can't hurt you any. I got it.
Yeah,
go ahead,
dude. Sorry, I was gonna say, once she said yes to the engagement or the proposal, then I felt like I was walking on water and I could do no wrong. So maybe I was doing them all at the same time for a reason. But that was certainly the scariest thing I've done all year.
Well, you know, I think it's so great to have a wife that is involved in thoroughbred racing, because they understand, and her more than anybody else. I mean, her father being a trainer as well. You know, you just, it's so, it makes your life so much easier to have a wife that understands why you're not at the Little League game on Saturday, why you don't mow the lawn and have a barbecue on Sunday like everybody else in the world. I mean, it just makes a huge difference to your life. And I think that's a real feather in your cap too, and a great launching point for your new stable.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. She's absolutely wonderful for me. She's made me a better person. She's, you know, she, not to be cliche, but she completes me. And she's one of the reasons why I'm doing this. Because, you know, you always have a little shred of doubt in yourself and don't necessarily want to take that next step, or you're scared to take that next step. Gabby's always been there and is insisting that I'm ready, that I need to take that next step. And, you know, without her, I don't know if I'd be doing this right now. So I'm very, very grateful for her. And I know she's just wonderful for me.
She completes me. You stole that from Jerry Maguire, man.
I did. 1996. Don't want to sound cliche, but Jerry Maguire.
You talk about being in uncomfortable situations and learning. Trust me, once you say I do, as somebody who's been married 19 years, you're going to learn an awful lot, my friend. That's one hell of an education.
I agree. And, you know, I'm not nervous about that. I really did. Gabby is absolutely my best friend, and we make each other better. She comes home, she's had bad days. I help her through it and vice versa. And that's all you can look for. You look for, you know, your best friend, your soulmate, and that's what she is to me. So she's going to make this journey a lot easier than it would be without her.
Yeah, no kidding.
Talking with trainer Norman Cassie here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Getting ready to, well, he's already out on his own, but getting ready to saddle that first horse under the Norman Cassie banner. Norman, when can we look for that first horse from the Cassie barn?
February 7th. The horse just worked this morning. It's a horse that has run for Dad, but as soon as she ran her last race, they moved her over to my barn, so to speak. Her name's Rate of Return. She's doing really well. It's for Gabe Grossberg, a longtime client of Dad's, and he's going to be one of those guys that kind of gives me a little bit of a push to start. But she's, like I said, she worked really well this morning, so it's exciting. We have an opportunity to win a race a week from now, and it's a pretty cool position to be in.
How many horses do you have right now?
This is the only horse I have right now, Mike, but the truth is it's starting now. Like, today is the day that it starts. So what I'm doing is I've got three or four groups of people that want to claim horses, so I can go out and claim some older horses to take to Kingland to run opening week. And the majority of people who have already kind of promised me some horses, they basically just want to send me two-year-olds, which is great. You know, that's what I feel comfortable with. That's what I'm good at. And that's where the future is. But at the same time, I'm going to need some older horses to run just to be able to get the stalls from Churchill or Kingland or wherever I end up, because nobody's going to want to give some young guy with just two-year-olds that aren't going to be ready for 2.5 months stalls. So I got to go out and prepare and find some older claiming horses to take.
Yeah, it's always good to have something to run to get your banner going. Speaking of banners, are you going with the red and white of your dad, or what are your colors look like, and how would we identify your barn?
Well, funny you should ask. So I'm black and red. I was always going to have a little red because I was always going to steal a bunch of dad's stuff. So that was
good plan.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta be able to steal some stuff. I was always going to have red, but more importantly, my dad's red and white. My mom's dad, who was a trainer, he was black and white, and Grandpa, Dad's dad, the original Norman Cassie, he was black and red. So it's just naturally for me to be black and red. And I'll use the white bridles that we use in the afternoons. It's still in races, but I'm also going to incorporate them in the horses that train in the morning. So basically, it'll be black and red and white. It looks pretty sharp, and I'm really proud of what we came up with. But there's definitely some sentimental reasons behind it. All my family, it's been their colors forever.
Not to mention those are University of Louisville colors too, Norm.
No, Mike, we have to distinguish because there's a lot of farms in Lexington that probably bleed blue that I do know what I'm saying. So we are black and red, not red and black. There's a huge difference.
Norm Cassie with us here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Norm, what things do you plan to keep in your program and do the same as you've been doing with your dad over the years? And what things might you tweak a little bit to put your own thumbprint on your operation?
Well, I love the way that we operate. I love the way that prepare the horses, the way that we work the horses, you know, the weeks that lead up to a race, I'm going to keep the same. I believe in it, and preparation provides confidence. I'm always confident when horses come into a race that they're going to run well because of the way they were prepared. So I certainly want to change that. Another thing that I'm going to keep that also I think is a big selling point for me is, you know, I want to train horses and just have, you know, the horses at racetracks, whereas Dad has the horses at racetracks but also owns and operates his own layup farm and getting ready farm. I'm going to utilize that for clients that I get that don't have any other affiliations with other farms already. I'll obviously use and be able to use Dad's place, which is awesome. And the other thing that I'm going to do, if I have two-year-olds or horses that are sent to me that we don't think can cut it in Kentucky, I'll still continue to send those up to Dad, the Woodbine, where hopefully the horses that maybe were purchased for a little too much money that can't cut it at the Kentucky or New York level, we can send the Woodbine and hopefully you know, help break even a little bit on the bills. So I'll continue to do that, and I think that's one of the reasons why we've been so successful. Other than that, I don't know what I'll change. Mike, to be honest, I really respect the way that Dad does things, and I'm sure there's going to be something that I change along the line. But right now, I'm really confident in what we've done and the system that we've put in place. So I wouldn't imagine I'm changing too much.
You mentioned having one horse as of today, and that's going to change obviously in the next couple of weeks, I would imagine. But you're in a situation where most trainers starting out don't go from taking care of 200 head of horses or maybe even three down to one. talk about the culture shock a little bit.
You're used to the action. So usually I'm in charge of about 70 to 90 horses at this point. And believe me, I'm helping Dad a little bit. I'm in a consultant phase right now for Cassie Racing. So we still have World Approval running. We still have Luck Cornell. We still have a lot of big-name horses that I'm kind of overseeing it for the time being. And officially, I won't be with the company anymore on we'll say April 1st, but I don't want it to be April Fool's Day. So I still have a little bit of action going on. Now, when we get to Kentucky and it's just me and maybe I have 10, 12 horses, it's certainly going to be different because I'm used to being busy all the time. I won't be as busy. And, you know, I think the most important thing is to recognize that one of the reasons why we've been so successful is that we don't overthink things. We don't have time to overthink things because we have so much going on. I can't sit back and have 12 horses and try to overanalyze and micromanage everything because that's not what got me in this position to begin with. So basically, I just got to make sure I keep that same mentality that I've had all along, even though it's only 12 horses or whatever the number may be, and continue to be successful in that way.
Yeah, it'll give you more time to go out and hustle clients at the track and that kind of thing too. So it's a good way to go.
And I think that's what I've got to look at it as. It's like, okay, I'm going to do the training part. Maybe I'll be done a lot earlier and I won't have as much to do in the afternoon. But that's the time for me to really start honing in on talking to potential clients, doing the billing, following the book work, and learning that stuff that I don't have any idea about, which is the stuff that's really going to end up making or breaking me. Because if I get the clients and I get the horses, I'm very, very confident in that. Like, I know what to do. I've been doing it for the last 10 years, essentially. But it's getting to that point that's going to be the hard part.
Your dad, when he was on the show, by the way, just, you know, talking about acquiring horses, he assured Mike and I that there was no way you were ever getting world approval. He said it like three times. It was almost like biblical, you know?
Well, I won't say about that. I'm going to talk to Mrs. Weber when we get off the phone. Now, that's all right, guys. But you know what? You know, I know this is a little bit about us, but world approval is doing fantastic right now, and he actually runs this weekend at Tampa, so really exciting to get him back going, and hopefully maybe just possibly getting to do a Dubai trip before I break off from Dad officially.
Yeah, world approval, of course, giving you another victory. The Cassie's another victory in the Breeders' Cup Mile at Del Mar this past year. Let's talk about the first victory in the Breeders' Cup Mile at Keeneland in 2015. Tepin finally breaking an 0-for-23 streak that you were on with Breeders' Cup horses, Norm. And it was a very emotional day. We were there to broadcast the event, and I can remember your dad and how emotional he was after the race. How about you?
Very well. You know what was so emotionally rewarding about her is that her bad beats at Saratoga really kind of hammered that race in. I remember after getting nailed, I think Descenta beat us in the Boston Spa right on the wire at Saratoga, and just it was the same day as American Pharoah when American Pharoah got beaten at Travers, and I'm walking back with Jimmy Barnes, and we're both dejected, which is Baffert's main assistant, and we're both dejected, and he says to me, "Don't worry, we'll get them in the fall at Keeneland." It kind of was like, yeah, that would be awesome. And to do that, to then take a filly that got beaten the most heartbreaking ways, their two starts at Saratoga, and then go and dominate a field in the First Lady, and then come back and beat the boys in the Breeders' Cup turf, which is so, or excuse me, the Breeders' Cup Mile, which is so emotionally rewarding that it was just, I can't put in the words what it was like, but it was, it's as good as it gets. That's all I can say.
Yeah, that was quite a day. And as I recall, you won two. Did you win two that day? Or you won two Breeders' Cups?
Yeah, Mike was wrong. You know, we had actually won our first Breeders' Cup the day before Catch a Glimpse.
That's right.
Won the Breeders' Cup Juvenile.
That's right.
Turf. But you know, with all that being said, the Breeders' Cup Mile is one of the marquee original Breeders' Cups. And to do it with a filly was just the cherry on top. So, you know, not to take anything away from Catch a Glimpse. She has a special place in our hearts as well. But, I mean, Tepin kind of solidified everything.
Yeah, that's right. It's 100. I forgot about Catch a Glimpse. That's right. That was the first Breeders' Cup win the day before. With Tepin, Norm, if you could put your finger on one thing that made her so special and so good, what was it?
Well, for one, she just loved what she did. Like, I mean, you've never seen a horse get, I mean, we come back from her breezes or her timed workouts, and you could just tell she had more pep in her step. Like, she was just so happy to go out there and stretch her legs and put in timed workouts. I just know, you know, without a doubt, that she just absolutely loved what she did. She was also the model of consistency. So she was a horse that you could put on a regular training pattern or work pattern, and she never missed a beat. I don't think the whole time I was ever around her, she ever had a bad scope. She never bled. She never had mucus. She just, everything you ever needed to do, she did. And, you know, she was very talented. Was she the most talented horse we've ever trained? I don't know. I think we've probably had faster horses, that we've had horses that could run farther. But at the same time, she just never missed a beat, and I think that allowed her to really excel at the highest level.
Yeah, her tenacity was something else. I mean, you just, when you watched her run, you never felt like she was going to get beat. Now, that's not to say she didn't, but she just had that look in her eye like, you know, you're going to have to run awful hard to beat me. And it was like every race, you just see it in her eyes when she was coming down the stretch.
There's nothing more exciting than walking a horse over for a race, knowing that she's going to run her race. Like, I think most horses we run over, like, we train them, we're happy with the way that they trained, but sometimes horses just run and you can't explain why they didn't run well. Like, it's like, well, They threw in a clunker, this and that. Tepin, you never had to worry about that. She was going to run her race. You just had to put her in the right spot, and at the right time, she was going to run her race. And if circumstances dictated that she got beat, it wasn't her fault. You know, but there's just something. I mean, I remember walking over for the Breeders' Cup, the race that she lost, unfortunately, and Classic Empire had just won the Juvenile, and we're walking over with Tepin, basically like it must have felt like when Mike Tyson walked into into a boxing bout during the late 80s. Like, you just knew you were walking over with the baddest horse on the planet. And that's just so – it was just such a cool feeling.
Yeah, it's that's amazing. She was, you know, so cool because not only did she have huge fans in the United States, but worldwide as well. Everybody watched her run.
Yeah, she did. You know, the funniest thing about her or about the whole last night deal is that was not something that was really on my radar for whatever reason. I just – wasn't that I didn't care for it. It's just it didn't excite me the way that it excited a lot of the race fans. I really like North American racing. So, like, for us to go over to Ascot, I was happy because I thought she deserved a shot and everything, but it wasn't like, oh, I'm so excited about this. When we got over there, my opinion changed drastically. Amazing place, amazing people, and amazing how many people watch and care about that. Because Tepin made us a household name. And I'm not so sure she could have done that any other way than going over to England and winning that race.
He's trainer Norman Cassie. He is our special guest on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. We're going to get to a short commercial break. We'll come back with more. We'll talk about some of the other moments that he will never forget, and we'll talk about that relationship with his dad that will compel him to greater success up the road, no doubt about it. Norman Cassie with us on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. We're back right after this. Make plans now to attend the Fasig Tipton Kentucky Winter Mix Sale February 5th and 6th at the Fasig Tipton Sales Grounds on Newtown Pike in Lexington, Kentucky. And nominations are now being accepted for the 2018 Fasig Tipton Gulfstream Sale, being held at Gulfstream Park in Hallandale Beach, Florida on March 28th. You can nominate to this premier two-year-old in training sale by visiting FasigTipton.com. That's FasigTipton.com. Where will you be?
Bloom Racing.
Majestic City could also still do it, and here he comes.
Majestic City running a big one.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Soul Driver the leader, though. Soul Driver in front.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at BloomRacing.com.
It all started with a dream. A dream to be the best. To breed the best. To race the best.
Super Saver Ross Amaya, what a finish to the class.
And to stand the best. Windstar Farm, dedicated to the dream.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
I think the most important thing he's taught me as far as horsemanship is patience. A lot of our best horses have come after layoffs because we needed time. The horses needed time to develop and do better, horses like Tepin or Noble Bird. And then as far as just being a human being, just being nice and treating everyone with respect, I think probably the most important thing that we do is we're just gracious to everyone. That doesn't happen back here on the backside a lot, and I think people respect us for it. He's my hero. I think everybody needs to have people that they need to look up to and try to like replicate, or I don't know the best way to describe it, but everybody, most successful people have people they look up to, and I'll acknowledge I look up to Dad a lot.
That's trainer Norm Cassie talking about the relationship with his father, Mark Cassie. And Norm is our special guest on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton here tonight. Welcome back to the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Jude Feld in our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios. If you missed any portion of this show, head over to our website, horseracingradio.net, a podcast available for you to listen to at your leisure. You can do that, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. All of our Trainer Talk programs and all of our talk shows available for you to listen to via podcast on our website. Pretty special comments there from Norm Cassie. That was from an interview that I did with Norm and his father prior to this year's Kentucky Derby, when they were there with the favorite. And some special words being said by Norm and even by his dad afterwards. Norm, your dad went on after those comments to say that he certainly wouldn't be where he is today without you, and that you are probably the most important part of the rise of the Cassie team and the success that you've been able to achieve. What's that mean to hear your dad say those words?
Well, it means everything. I think about stuff all the time, Mike, and I think about just growing up and, you know, what I did growing up and what motivated me, and all that ever really motivated me all the way from middle school up till now, even now, is just making my parents proud. So to have my dad, who his whole life has been based around horses, his father was based around horses, to come out and give me a lot of the credit for his organization and the places that we've gone, it makes me proud. But, you know, what probably makes me proudest is knowing, you know, how proud he is of me. So that's all I ever really wanted.
The other aspect of that quote was that you mentioned that he taught you to treat people with respect. And he went on afterwards to say the very same thing. And he said that that really goes back to your grandfather, Norman, who passed away in March of 2016. You know, that's something that was instilled in your dad from a young age, and now he's instilling it in you, and it served you well.
The thing I love saying, like, as a testament to my grandfather, is that I've never really crossed anybody that has ever said anything negative about him. He seemed to be a guy that pretty much was universally loved. And in horse racing, that's a very, very hard thing to do, because we're direct competitors with each other. There's always, you know, backdoor deals and things like that going on. And for somebody to be pretty much universally admired in horse racing is hard to do. But that's a testament to my grandfather, because he was so humble about things. He was so gracious to everybody, from, you know, from hot walkers all the way up to the breeders and everything. And it just, you know, that's how I've always lived my life, but that's how my parents have lived their life. That's how my grandparents lived their life. And it's, you know, it's instinct. So, I'm very, very proud of the fact that, about the way that we are viewed and how much people admire us.
You know, it's interesting. Your father is about the most Zen trainer that I've ever encountered. He probably is the most Zen trainer I've ever encountered. If you saw him wandering around in an orange robe, I mean, you'd think he just came down from the mountain in Tibet. He's got the most calm demeanor and unflappable, really. Do you have much of that in you, or are you a little bit more intense?
I don't think I'm intense. I let things roll off. The only thing that I would say that was probably a little different is dad may have a horse not run well, and he'll completely brush it off and say, let's ride it off, or yada yada yada, and he's probably right. I guess because I'm relatively new, haven't been around as long, you know, in general compared to him, you know, I try to analyze maybe why a horse didn't run well, or what we did wrong, or what we could do differently this time. And where we met in the middle, it's probably where the magic happened, because, you know, I didn't just accept failure. Like, I wanted to know why Kevin ran poorly this time and what we can do different. And dad was always laid back a little bit, but together we figured out things. And, you know, now we have four Breeders' Cup wins and basically on top of the world. So I like to think that that's when dad says I had a lot to do with it, it's because, you know, I tried actively to learn from all of our failures and our mistakes, and I think that had a lot to do with it.
Norm, one thing that I've noticed about you in the time that I've had a chance to watch you and be around you is that you always seem to be relatively centered. You're never too high. You're never too low. You always kind of tend to be right in that middle category. This is a game that we know has the highest highs, the lowest lows. How difficult or how challenging can it be to maintain that personality and that demeanor even through some difficult times?
I wonder if it's going to be harder with less horses, Mike. You know, like, I'm used to – and listen, like, the horses have all been in Dad's name, but I feel responsible, especially for the horses that, you know, that are directly under my care or my training program or whatever. So don't think that it's just because I was working for Dad that I was even keel, but I think the biggest difference going to be is that maybe you have a horse run poorly that you'd be – really disappointed with, you're upset with, but two or three races later, you're already running another horse. So you don't have time to dwell on things and be upset too much. We've won the biggest races in the world, and we've lost open 5,000 claimers. Now, like, I guess the biggest thing I always tell everybody is I don't understand why these trainers get so arrogant and cocky and think they're on, like, they're the hottest thing since sliced bread. You're not curing cancer. We're training racehorses. So sometimes you're right, sometimes you're wrong. Just be in the middle all the time, and you'll feel all right.
Yeah, well, I had two guys that I looked up to when I was training, when I was much younger. Gary Holman, who has since passed away, who's Pete Miller's stepfather, and he said to me one time, nobody should know whether you won or lost. You should have the same personality regardless. And then the late, great Charlie Whittingham told me, lose your money, but don't lose your personality. And I think those two things, that they sound like the quotes should have come from the other guy, but they are so pertinent. And I always used to hear those words, you know, when I'd start getting upset, you know, just forget about it, a little bit like your dad. But you can't, when you do have a small stable, which is pretty much all I had my whole life, you do have a tendency to, like, think about the horses a lot, and you don't have that many to think about. It's a lot different thinking about 90 than it is about 12, you know?
Yeah, well, that's where I think the big difference is going to be. So I really like, and, you know, I it makes me proud of Mike acknowledging the way that I act, because I try to be that way. And I just think it's a lot easier, though, with 90 horses than it's going to be with 12. So one of the things that I'm going to have to learn is to do it with 12. And, you know, I guess it's good that I already recognize it. But I do think that is a reality. I think my attitude is going to be a little bit different just because I'm dealing with less horses.
Norm Cassie, our special guest on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Norm, I can tell you, you're already somewhat less emotional than your dad, because if I had played a clip like that coming out of the break and I had asked him what it meant to hear those words, he would have been crying 10 minutes ago. I can promise you that. He actually refers to me now as Barbara after Barbara Walters, because I always make him cry in all of our interviews. Remember at Breeders' Cup, Jude, he actually started by saying, before we even got started with the interview, he said, don't make me cry.
Yeah. Well, he's emotional. It's funny how a lot of us in racing, you know, we do have a tendency to choke up, especially when something really cool happens. And I think it's because we all know how hard it is to do what we do. And when it all comes together, it just makes you think about, you know, what you've done to get to that point. And your dad certainly had a lot of ups lately, so his tears are usually from joy or emotion more than anything else.
Yeah, it's just, you know, any time for me, like when we win a big race, and again, it goes back to what Mike's saying, I just do a better job of hiding it than Dad. I think Dad likes to embrace it and, like, almost show it off that he's crying. I'm trying everything I can not to cry on television, even though I am. But it's very, very hard to do, because you know what I think of? I just think about every time we win a big race, I think about how proud, you know, my grandpa, Dad's dad would be, because, you know, he didn't get to be around for, he got to see two of the Breeders' Cup wins, but now it's like, I don't know. I mean, we're almost at a different category now, and he didn't get to see that. And then I also think about my mom's dad. At my mom's house, she has a dining room that's got pictures, and my mom's dad was just a trainer at River Downs his whole career. Like, probably never started a horse at a place like Churchill Downs or anything like that. And for his grandson to be involved with Breeders' Cup horses and Derby horses, that just makes me incredibly proud that's happening. And that's the hard part. That's the thing that makes me cry.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting. Not only did your grandfather not get to see some of the latest success that you've been able to have, he won't be able to see you go out on your own, but the other thing that he missed was after he passed away in March of 2016, a few months later, your dad was inducted into the Canadian Horse Racing Hall of Fame. Boy, what a roller coaster of emotions that year had to be in 2016, Norm.
It was just, you know, Mike, just hard. No real other way to describe it. I don't think people realize what I was just saying about how I was trying to make my parents proud. I know that's why what Dad's motivation was his whole life. He idolized Grandpa. He just looked up to him so much. I know that's why he does what he does. And, probably the best year of his career, he had to do it alone without Grandpa, and that just had to be very, very tough for Dad.
How about for you, watching your dad reach that pinnacle, be inducted into the Canadian Hall of Fame? What was that like for you?
I'm just proud of my family. I'm just proud of everything that we've done, how we've accomplished it together, how I got to be a small part of that, and, how there's more left to be accomplished.
We spent some time in the first half of the program talking about Teppan, and you were great in talking about some of her career highlights, including that win in the Breeders' Cup Mile at Keeneland. What was it like watching her sell for $8 million at the Fasig Tipton November sale last year?
It's bittersweet. That's how I would have to describe it. It was so incredibly rewarding to see her sell that much, to think that the best, probably, we'd have to say one of the best farms in the world is willing to spend $8 million for her. That's how much they respect her. But also to know that, although she had been gone for months prior, this is it. It's the end of the road. It's my job's done here. And it was a job well done, but at the same time, it was very, very sad to go in the stall one last time this year, and I gave her a hug, and it was amazing, like, because she was such a different horse. Like, she was always happy at the barn until we officially retired her. Like, it was very obvious when we retired her, she was tired of doing it. Like, and I told you what made her special earlier on in the interview was made her special is that she loved her job so much. Well, the last month in training, you could just tell she wasn't into it. She wasn't in love with being a racehorse anymore. And that's when the decision was to breed her. And she was just so happy to be pregnant, to be in foal, and you could just tell that she was grateful for where she was.
Yeah, it's amazing how that switch can go off sometimes with a horse that's so consistent and so into what they do, and then all of a sudden there's just nothing left. And I don't know if it's mental or physical or what happens, but it does happen, and it's almost shocking when it does.
And when it's shocking, because it's such, like with her especially, she's a perfect example, because it was night and day. It went from a horse that had to train first thing in the morning because she was coming out of the stall, if not a horse that would just come bouncing off the track after a big workout, to a horse that just basically did not want to go to the race track anymore, basically was being forced to train. It was like, no, this, she doesn't want to do this. She's not, most importantly, she's not going to run well if we do run her. So it's obvious, but it's shocking because it's night and day difference. But at least we're fortunate enough to be around a horse like Teppan, who was smart enough to just make it so obvious that we couldn't even screw it up.
Norm, talk about maybe a couple of other horses that you've been around outside of the World Approvals and the Teppans and some of the great champions that you've been privileged to be around. some of the other horses that people might not be as familiar with that are always going to stick out to you and you're always going to remember them?
Clearly, Foxy is probably my favorite horse that I've been around or I trained. This is going back probably 8 or 9 years. She ran a good third in the American Oaks out in California when all the horses were still around. She should have won. She had a bad trip. You could actually hear Garrett Gomez scream out a four-letter word as he was galloping out because he should have won. And he knew it. But I don't know what it is, but that filly will always stick out to me. She didn't win anything big. She was just such a nice horse to be around, such a gentle horse. And she just resonated with me forever. I don't know. I'll never forget her. And I'll never forget Seaside Retreat, which is the first horse we ever ran in the Kentucky Derby. And he was the complete opposite of Clearly Foxy because he was one of the meanest horses I've ever been around. And he was one of the first horses that I was exposed to, like a Classic Empire, who was too smart for his own good. And we had to do things with him to trick him in the training. So he was one that we'd have to breeze from the gate every time he worked. The only difference with him is that he was able to be held in Classic Empire weather for obvious reasons.
Yeah, it's interesting how those horses, they may not be the most famous horses or whatever, but they work their way into your heart and for various and sundry reasons. Do you have a horse that maybe nobody really remembers, or only the owners and you, that you did a great job with that nobody really knows what a great job you did with the horse?
Well, you know, a horse that I think. And I hate to admit it, the horse that I always think about that could have been really something special but came around right before we kind of really figured everything out. So I'm talking 2 or 3 years before Tap In, World Approval, all the big-name horses. She beat Royal Delta, so, I mean, it's not like she didn't win a race of consequence. We had a filly named Funny Proposition that Mr. Oxley owns. She beat Royal Delta in the Florida League. But I know her better than anybody, and I still think she was the fastest horse we ever had in training. And I feel like if we could have just kept her sounder, if we did things a little bit differently, she would have been our first big, big horse. And, that's what I like. I don't like – this is where Dad and I differ. Like, I like to kind of admit that I don't think we handled it right. You know, like, I think we could have done better with that horse. And unfortunately, it didn't pan out. I know Dad's got a 2-year-old Tappet out of her that's coming in this year. So hopefully, for Mr. Oxley, she'll get her dues through her babies.
Visiting with Norm Cassie here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Don't forget, if you miss any portion of this show, all you have to do is go over to our website, horseracingradio.net, and check out the podcast at your leisure. This show and all of our Trainer Talk shows available on our website. And don't forget to follow us on social media at HRRN on Twitter. Norm, what is your most cherished racing possession?
Any of Teppan's saddle towels, I basically have the entire collection. I was fortunate enough that Dad allowed me to have all of them. Mr. Masterson didn't care, and I basically have every saddle towel she ever wore, which, other than the Royal Ascot one, because believe it or not, Royal Ascot doesn't give you the saddle towel.
So really?
I have Breeders' Cups. No, because if you go back and look, it's just basically a generic saddle towel. It's just a black Royal Ascot saddle towel. They don't have personalized saddle towels. So it looked like it was used from the 80s.
Yeah.
So
you didn't want it anyway.
I didn't say that. I would have taken it gladly. But I like saddle towels. I like that. Also, my grandpa, before he passed away, gave me this really cool It's hard to describe. He said he got it from Thailand. It's basically it looks like a bronze statue with a jockey on a horse, but it's actually an old school lighter. So it's got a thing that you pull out, and you just, I guess you would have a little kerosene or something on it. It dips like a pin, like an old school pin, and it's used as an old school lighter. I guess everybody had them on their office and their desk in their offices, but my grandpa gave me that. And I would say, like worst case scenario, if my house or my apartment or wherever to catch on fire and I'm in one of those doomsday scenarios where I have to pick something out, that would be what I would grab. So it's actually not racing memorabilia, but it's a gift from my grandpa, and it's irreplaceable. So that would be it.
Would Royal Ascot be your favorite international destination?
Well, the truth is, I haven't ever been anywhere else.
Yeah.
So it's hard to, like I said at the beginning of the interview, I didn't hold it in very high regard. My tune has changed now. I do think it's awesome, but in fairness to everywhere else, I've never been to Dubai. I've never been to Hong Kong. So it's hard to say. But it's just like anything else. It's got its mystique that I'm sure it's hard to come by anywhere else.
Yeah, the more you travel internationally and see different racetracks in different places, you kind of get the bug to run some more around the world. I know Mr. Ramsey is big into that. He loves the international flavor and the fact that he feels like he's representing the United States wherever he goes. And it's really pretty cool. I mean, I know you know that feeling from Ascot, but, you know, you could show up at the Ark one day without any problem.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a bucket list thing. That's something that I really – horse racing is very cool because it puts you in – like, I guess the day that Tepin retired, I put it out a tweet or something that said something along the lines. I believe this, that she took us places I would never even dream about going to. And that's what horse racing does. At the end of the day, these horses take you to places and put you in the situations that you could only dream of. I would have never imagined going to England, but Tepin took me to England, and I'm literally 5 feet away from the Queen. Like that's what horse racing can do for somebody, and I look forward to having more experiences like that.
How much time have you spent thinking about the day when you have a horse in the same race as your dad and you actually win?
Honestly, that's a funny question. It's a very good question. I haven't thought about that. I don't know why, but that seems to cross Dad's mind more than me. because he talks about it. Any interview I ever read, he acknowledges that. Like, he cannot wait until we're in the same big races together. And I don't know why, but I don't think about that. To me, I told you, it's going to be hard. I don't know what his fascination with it is, but to me, I would feel bad beating Dad in a big race. So it's going to happen. There's no doubt about it. It's going to happen. I'm not saying I'm going to beat him, but I'm saying we're going to run against each other, and it'll be fun. It'll be fun for everybody to watch.
Why don't you make a guarantee right now on Trainer Talk that you're going to beat him the first time you race against each other?
All right, I'll guarantee that.
He really did. I forced him into that. He really doesn't actually believe that.
No, I would just have to make sure I'm in a scenario where I was very, very, very confident that it would happen.
Well, Norm, you're big on social media, too. People can follow you at Norm Cassie on Twitter. And I know that's a big part of keeping the message out there and letting people know what you have going on with your stable and your career. So we'll encourage them to do that and encourage people to send horses to you and to give you a call and say, hey, tell me about your program. I think that's a huge step in the right direction.
Yeah, I just want to get it out there that I am doing this. The announcement came out in November, which was a while ago, but really officially I'm going to start doing this in April. I'm willing to listen to anybody. I'm very, very confident in what I do. I think I'm a good trainer, and I think I'll do right by your horses. And I just look for opportunities from anybody who's willing to give me a shot.
All right, Norm, we have about 2.5 minutes left before we have to wrap up the show. I always like to end by playing a little game here. We call it Five Fast Facts to Know About Norm Cassie. So I'm going to fire off five quick questions. You'll answer them all very quickly, and we'll be done. Are you ready?
Yeah.
All right, first one. We'll keep it real simple. Your favorite horse not trained by a Cassie?
Marty Jones.
All right. Favorite sport outside of horse racing would be what?
Baseball.
Favorite team in that sport?
Toronto Blue Jays.
Ooh. All right, you can have one last meal. That's it. What's it going to be?
Filet, baked potato.
Perfect. Man after my own heart. All right, and if you weren't training racehorses, what else might Norm Cassie be doing for a living?
That, I don't know the answer to that. That's, thankfully I don't need to know that.
Yeah, and that's what makes him so good. He's Norm Cassie here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Jude, just like many of the great ones, this is all they think about.
Yeah, well, it's a business where single-mindedness ends you in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Norm, really appreciate the visit, my friend. All the best moving forward. We'll look forward to following your career, and good luck on February 7th.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it, guys.
All right, go get him. Norm Cassie with us on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. If you missed any portion, remember, the podcast will be posted on our website, horseracingradio.net, Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. How good is that kid going to be?
Yeah, I think he's slam dunk.
Yeah, no doubt. Cinch. All right, our producer, Lee Delapina, did a great job for us in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington studios. For Jude Feld, I'm Mike Penna. We will talk to you next time on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Thanks for listening.